This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sarah. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
All right, here we go on a Monday. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. Hope everybody had a terrific weekend. Watching a little Royals baseball was more enjoyable the last week or so. It turns out when they win, you know, it's nice to hear Jake Eisenberg even more when they're winning on 96.5 The Fan. We're going to talk Royals baseball a little bit later on in the show. Of course, the draft front and center, though, all weekend long. The Chiefs make their selections, give our thoughts on some of those, including just what was clearly a theme for the Chiefs 2025 draft. You guys can give us your perspective, as always, on the Jays Southland Soda Service text line, 913-586-7965. We'll get the video stream up and running in just a bit as well, up on Facebook, Twitch, YouTube, Twitter. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any portion of this show or any of the shows, whether it's Fesco and Dusty or The Drive as well, right here on 96.5 The Fan. You guys have a good weekend? All good?
I did. I went to the Royals game yesterday, actually. I was there for UMKC day.
That's right. That's right. I went Friday night. It was chilly over the weekend, wasn't it, for you out at the
game? Yeah, a little bit. It was actually, Sunday wasn't too bad. I was in like a light hoodie and it was comfortable. Plus, I got one of the UMKC windbreakers, which was nice, even though I didn't purchase the theme ticket. One of the other staff members at UMKC did it. I want to make it very clear before I say this thing that this was not on purpose, and I want that known because I immediately got multiple texts from other people who were at the game during the time, because part of the reason it was UMKC day is they had finished a commercial that will air during the normal stuff. Mm-hmm. And I was sitting by a former student of mine who is the featured person in the commercial. As a result of that, there was some Jumbotron time. Okay. I was right behind her just looking awkward as hell.
Did you not wave?
I just did the clap, but I didn't want to look directly into the camera. It was clearly her. They were showing other students. And I was just like, hey, okay.
I need to see video of this.
So stupid.
I wish I had video of this.
We could probably get it.
I need video of the awkwardness.
I could feel the awkwardness. Yeah, it was oozing a little bit.
It was a good weekend, though, even if the weather wasn't the best to go out to the K, as the Royals, of course, took the series against the Astros earlier in the week, swept the Colorado Rockies. So we'll work that in. But yeah, man, the draft by Saturday, I don't know how you guys take in the draft. By Saturday, it is a notification. Like, we were texting each other in our group chat about like how the draft was going and things like that. But it's not one of those for me on Saturday where I'm sitting in front of the TV. Like, I'm going to go do other things. I'll keep an eye on my phone, text some buddies if they're trying to give thoughts on it as well. And just like we were doing that kind of stuff. But the draft on Saturday, at that point, I'm like, I step away a little bit. And
sure,
let me just focus on the Chiefs stuff. I don't need to sit there for another 5 hours.
I became instantly more fascinated the longer Sanders didn't. I was like,
sure,
more engrossed in that than even like, okay, who the Chiefs are going to take in the fifth round. Although their lack of running back kept me engaged there for a while, which we can talk about in a minute. I'm like, okay, is it going to be Samson in the fourth or Neal in the fifth and all these names, or Giddens, any of these other names that we've been kicking around. And so I came into that, and my biggest, honest to God, after I went through all of it, I'm like, okay, how do I actually feel about the Chiefs draft? I think it's hard in any draft to just be like pissed, right? I don't come out of there and I'm like, all right, heads have got to roll. Like, no, but I think it's fairly obvious. Maybe a month ago I had said, hey, I think they're at a fork in the road, and I think that they're going to choose either to draft for right now, as in a team that wants to win right now, and is going to continue trying to look for guys who will be impact immediately, or they're going to start drafting for the future. And I don't know how you look at what they did and do not just say they might not have taken a single starting player for their team in 2025 in this year's draft. They might, maybe a rotational defensive lineman. I think the corner might be the strongest argument in Nolan Williams, maybe. But they very well might not have taken a single starter in the draft. So they were drafting for the future and for replacements.
Yeah, it was a depth draft, and it was for 2026 and beyond. You know, not that some of these guys aren't going to play. I think multiple players are going to have an impact at some point in the 2025 season. But if you're just waiting for someone to step in right away and be the clear starter, yeah, not the case. Now, I will say, to a certain extent, that also just speaks to where the roster is at on the positive end, too, which is this was a team that has just won 15 games in the regular season last year, and there's a lot of the starters back on the team. Sure. And so you were drafting for depth because there's a lot of expiring contracts on this roster, specifically on defense. I know we'll talk about how heavy it was defensively again, specifically on that side of the ball with expiring contracts. So I get it. Like we all talked about Josh Simmons on Friday. We all know the scenario there. Most likely he's not playing in 2025. There's a chance, but most likely he's not playing. I think that Noah Williams, the corner, actually has a chance to be the guy with the most playing time out of this entire rookie class. Does it mean that he's going to be the best? No. But he, in year one, could end up playing more than anybody else. And then, honestly, the next closest might be either the Lott, who's going to rotate, or it could be the seventh-round running back that's a spell back for them at times. So that's kind of where I think playing time-wise in year one. Now, 1 year doesn't make or break a career, but if you want somebody to come in and get you excited in 2025, Noah Williams might have the chance to do that first.
Yeah, I just didn't think that it just didn't offer anything outside of that range. It was just a depth draft, which is fine. I'm not saying you can't get away with that or operate under those conditions, especially if your team that's already doing a lot of winning, which they obviously are and have consistently done over the course of this stretch. But I mean, I'm not going to come like Norman Lott. He didn't play 30% of the snaps in college. His whole thing is not, does he win snaps? He obviously does that. His whole thing is, does he play enough to win enough snaps to make a difference kind of across the board? And so, like, player wise, I like some of the pick. Like, I like the defensive end. I like Lott. And you remember when we did the mock, I had him in there because he seems like a good fit. I think Simmons can work for a lot of reasons. I'm not even that offended by or upset by a lot of the players that showed. I told you I had corner higher on my need list. And by all accounts, in all the scouting reports I've obviously read, because I didn't know a ton about Noah Williams, he appears to be a Spags type corner. He seems physical and can play the outside similar to what they used to get in L'Jarius Sneed, which means Trent McDuffie could play maybe more inside if he's available. And I don't want Connor and some of these other like former safeties playing corners. So like I like most of the picks. I'm not sure that there's any starters in it. Like not for this year.
But ultimately, everybody said it's not a star draft, it's a starter draft. Get three starters if you can on your draft class.
Yeah.
And that still might happen, Cody, just because it's not going to happen in year one. There's still a chance that could end up being the case. I think a corner was just pretty evident. Other than McDuffie and Fulton, no other corners under contract after this year. Mm-hmm. So,
kind of down on Watson and Williams anyway. I don't need to see a bunch more out of them.
So now you have three, at least under contract, at bare minimum, heading into the post-2025 offseason, everything like that. I still think how people, you guys tell if I'm wrong, people will judge this draft class not so much off of the depth portion of it, even though that I still think it's underrated why the dynasty continues. It's because you find starters that can be on rookie deals for 4 years, but it's going to be judged most likely, as we said Friday, Josh Simmons, right? If they found the left tackle of the future, people aren't going to care too much about if they whiffed in the fourth round. If Josh Simmons doesn't play as well, but they found a star in the third round, people won't care as much there, right? But Josh Simmons is probably still going to be the key. He's a first rounder for a reason. We know about the risk, but there's a ton of upside that you get with him, and that'll be the one to watch, even if we have to wait till 2026 to judge it.
Yeah, I think so. And you're right, that will end up being, but who knows? Like, I can't tell you gold that they won't get a starting linebacker in the fourth round. I can't tell you that they won't get a starting running back out of that group. But I mean, you and I both know what the odds suggest are capable in there. Much, much, much lower, right? I mean, it's just, like, my whole thing on running back, and I mean, we can transition to that a little bit because you and I are in a similar camp, and I'm not trying to like rain on everyone's parade today because it appeared, based on social media, Chiefs fans are excited.
Well, nationally, the consensus grades out of 35 grades, if you buy into draft grades from plenty of the quote-unquote draft experts, the Chiefs had the fourth best draft class, if you want to believe what they're saying. So yeah, this is not a disaster. By the way, guess who was last?
Drew. Mm-hmm. Was it Cincy?
I mean, how perfect for this show that that's the case.
It was Cincinnati. They were dead last.
All the talk by like, hey, they just got, it's fine. They'll take care of it in the draft. At least the experts claim they have the worst draft.
I mean, people can say they have the worst draft. They drafted defensively. Thank God. That's all I care about. Because people can say they have the worst draft. They could have the best draft. And people who say a team has the best draft could also have the
draft grades are funny. I'm just giving you a hard time because out of 30 plus draft grades, your team had the worst.
I'm not surprised.
Still pretty funny.
I'm not surprised based on how the weekend went, just in terms of, you know, people's grades and positional value and when they draft him and all that other stuff.
Draft grade. Look, again, there's no reason. The reason why they got a good draft grade is because people really like Omar Norman Lott. People really like Jelati, how's he pronounced?
Jelati, I think.
Jelati.
I think it's Ashton Jelati.
Jalen Royal slid a little bit further.
Jalen Royal's a player that was being talked about in the third round. I think Dane Brugler had him as 66th overall in his beast rankings, right?
He was mocked to the second round by a lot of people.
So, had him a lot higher. So, I think people took, there's a lot of upside picks.
Oh, no doubt.
A lot of upside picks.
It just might take time. People are impatient, right? Like, it might take time to find out. I'll tell you, the only real complaint that I have, I actually don't have as big of an issue with the day one starter thing. It is how much we talked about running back, how deep the running back draft class was. It was the deepest class out of any position in this year's draft. And you didn't have to spend it on a first or second round pick. Hell, you didn't have to do it in the third round. But they didn't draft a running back till the seventh round. And this is not even a knock on the kid that they drafted. It's not about like him being bad or good.
No.
It's just priority-wise, I think the ceiling of the player you draft in the seventh round is lower than the ceiling of the guy I thought they could have drafted, or multiple guys they could have drafted in the third or fourth round. Does it mean that this kid can't help them? Of course not. Talking about Smith, by the way, of course, at SMU. I take issue with that. That is it. That, to me, you look at the running back room right now, and they've got Pacheco coming back from an injury, who I still think will have a huge season for them. Kareem Hunt doesn't have the explosiveness as we know anymore. Elijah Mitchell's there. He's been hurt most of his career. We'll see what happens. Carson Steele. And then now you got a couple undrafted running backs they've brought in, and then Smith in the seventh round. And after this season, the only guy under contract will be the guy they drafted, assuming he makes the team. And then who knows about the undrafted guys. And so are they in a position where next year they're going to have to spend money in free agency on a running back again? Or are they going to have to spend a premium pick on running back next year?
Fourth, third, second, something higher.
Because Smith, he could, I'm not saying he won't play this year. I mean, honestly, best case scenario is Smith shows something and Elijah Mitchell stays healthy and he ends up being a big surprise. And Elijah Mitchell ends up being a guy you extend after this season. And it's Mitchell and Smith and you go from there. Because otherwise, I don't know how they're not going to have to spend a premium pick next season on a running back.
I'm not even kidding. Like, this is not, oh God, this is so hard. Because I think fans always want to be the ultimate optimist, and that's okay. And so I'm going to come off as like the pessimist. Here's the optimist point of view. This, to me, means that they are very confident about the type of season Isaiah Pacheco could have. This is a ringing endorsement for Isaiah Pacheco. I don't think there's any other way to look at it. I think the Chiefs director of player personnel is going to talk at 11 o'clock today. I am confident one of the questions he will be asked is why they did not target running back earlier in the draft in order to try to secure that position a little bit more for the long term. I take this as an endorsement for Isaiah Pacheco. For the Chiefs fans who were just like, they got their guy, Breshad Smith, that's insane. He is just as likely to not make the team than have any kind of impact for the team this year. This is no different, draft-wise, than bringing in Carson Steele as an undrafted free agent. And Carson Steele made the team. That was a surprise. I want to remind people that Carson Steele was not originally projected to make the team. So, like, Smith is going to have to earn it.
Yeah, now his comp from his own college coaches was Isaiah Pacheco.
Yeah, and look, but that to me is the, and after all that, Carson Steele finished the year with 183 yards. You and I were just looking for more. What this boils down to is I was looking for a possible dude, like an absolute, like a future starting running back in the NFL. And it's not that Smith has 0% chance of doing that because Isaiah Pacheco was a seventh round pick. But we talk about Isaiah Pacheco like he was a unicorn. Getting a starting running back out of the seventh round, that's hard to do. It's really unlikely. The odds are infinitely
like. What do you guys make of the
in your favor?
What do you guys make of the running back room this year?
Kind of mediocre.
I think Pacheco. We forgot how effective he was prior to the injury. So I do believe Pacheco will bounce back on off season of being healthy, and he'll be effective. But if you wanted the explosiveness in the offensive backfield, to me, I don't know if they accomplished that this offseason. And Elijah Mitchell is a wild card because of his health. Kareem Hunt, we just know what he is. Short yardage, fine. It's just for a running back room that has four or five guys in it right now, it's like, does it really excite you?
I think it's one of the worst 10. On paper, it's one of the worst 10 in the league.
I think so.
Rooms?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Like, is there an argument against it? I mean, half the league just took a new starting running back to go into their room. The Browns took two quarterbacks and two running backs. They took two guys we liked on this show. They took Quinshon Judkins and Samson, didn't they? The Browns took two different running backs.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't use the Browns as the example of being ineffective at drafting.
I'm just saying,
their
room's better.
Sure.
Like, on paper, their room's better. I'm not, from a draft perspective, they had an interesting week.
I mean, I don't know if it makes people feel any better, but Rashard Smith graded better in terms of, like, a lot of people's evaluation than DJ Giddens, who was picked in the fifth round, then Devin Neal, then Damian Martinez. So he was in that ilk of, you know, the second tier, like the back half of the second tier. I mean, Jarquez
but not in every NFL team's mind. They had seven chances. When we're talking seventh round, we can definitely put this out. I don't care how he tested. 32 teams, seven times over.
I mean, yeah, it's the same reason why Kobe Bryant, for instance, wasn't even selected, and he was signed by the Falcons as an undrafted free agent. Everybody views things differently. It's interesting to see. It felt like, and I think I texted you guys this, it felt weird how it wasn't just Shador, but many people who we thought Jalen Royal sliding to where he did, it felt like there were more players that slid way further back in the draft than what we typically see. And I don't know if that's just inaccuracy based on mock drafts or if teams really had that much disparity in how they viewed different prospects.
Some of this is just personal draft fatigue. If I got to see one more tweet about an undrafted free agent out of Virginia, they're like, dog, guy's a beast. Can't believe they scored him. I saw that for 57 prospects. They're not all dudes. They're not all beasts. Watch this guy tear up the tape. 95% of them, their NFL dream will be a practice squad, one of the 16 guys who maybe occasionally get on an active roster for a millisecond. Like, they're not all dudes in the seventh round. Every team seemed to think they got a dude in the seventh round, and that's just not how it works.
Like, I think overall the room is, like we were talking about what it means for 2025. It's fine. It's not going to be.
The Chiefs aren't now
guaranteed to not win X amount of games because of it. But if you wanted them to be more explosive in the running back room, I don't buy that they did that. And if we're talking about the future with all the other picks, then to me, you're setting yourself up for 2026, and I guess it's fine. 2026, where from a running back perspective, you are probably going to either have to spend a decent amount of money on a free agent running back, which I really don't want them to do, or you're going to have to spend a premium pick next year in a draft running back class that's probably not as deep, so you might be pressed to actually spend a first or second round pick on that position. And Smith could be a very nice spellback this year. I'm not acting like this guy's going to be horrific. It's just more that you maybe missed out on an opportunity to really address the position, and they chose not to. And maybe we should have known this, Drew. We were all texting over the weekend. You mentioned Kareem Hunt. Maybe we should have known when they drafted Kareem Hunt. It was the concern we had that day when they re-signed him. I should say when they re-signed Kareem Hunt. We said, hey, does this mean they're not going to draft a running back? And we're like, oh, no, they certainly will. Well, it kind of did. It kind of did.
Yeah. They waited till the seventh round. They took a flyer. They took an absolute dart throw. It obviously had an impact there.
You know who would be labeled as the dog for the Chiefs? I'm looking at their undrafted free agent list right now.
Oh, boy. Who is it, Drew? Norfolk State or something.
He may end up being a fan favorite where people are really excited about this guy.
We already know Royals will be a favorite. That jersey, the Royals with the Chiefs jersey, is going to be an all-time seller.
Mac Delaina, wide receiver and returner from Fresno State. 4'3", 6'40", had 64 catches for over 1,000 yards last year. He's going to be the guy that makes a great catch at camp and everybody's freaking out.
You're calling it now? That's the guy?
Mac Delaina.
He's a dog, man. Yep. You seen that tape? Every other team in the NFL saw the tape and they thought 50th best undrafted free agent. But sure, I'm sure he's a dog. Guy's a beast. Look at the workout tape. It's just too many players, man.
Just wait till the one-handed catch comes or the kickoff return for a touchdown, whatever.
There might be 200 tweets about different players picked in the seventh round or undrafted free agents that people said that about.
Just because a guy has great college stats doesn't mean he's going to translate to the NFL in any way, shape, or form.
I'm sure he looked great at Toledo. His ass didn't get drafted. It probably not going to work out. He might occasionally, right? Turk Wharton comes in the league and the guy works out.
Yeah.
I'm not saying there's a 0%. It's never zero.
Yeah, again, this is the only thing I was disappointed about in the entire weekend. That was it. Everything else, I understand the logic behind. Even hell, I understand the logic with trading up to get a linebacker in the fifth round. Like I logically, everything makes sense. Their first round pick makes sense. Does it all mean it's going to work? Of course not. The one thing I don't get was waiting till the seventh round to get to draft a running back. That's it. That's really my big complaint.
Maybe not taking corner, but like I liked the value at Royals. I liked that they went double defensive linemen with their first three picks. You know, two of their first three picks. I had no problem there. I like the type of player they targeted, all those things.
We're going to talk more at 11 o'clock hour, but like, I also don't have a problem with them going defense heavy again. I think there's a very logical reason that they went defense heavy. I know there's some that really disagree with that thought they needed to go and just basically give Mahomes more weapons. I guess to that would just be the drafting a running back earlier. Otherwise, I have no problem. I think defensively, they have way too many guys with expiring contracts that they needed to do what they did.
I'd give it a solid B with a tremendous amount of upside, but a whole lot of unknown. Like just a good old solid B.
Ironically, the Buffalo Bills seem to do the exact same thing that the Chiefs did in terms of drafting defense heavy, not going with the weapons.
Man, we're going to play it later. Brett Veach isn't calling into the show today, I don't believe. Brandon Bean did over in Buffalo, and he let their hosts have it over there. They were really upset in Buffalo because they didn't take a wide receiver. And the general, and we can play it later in the show, but the general sense of it was, we were the number one offense in the league last year. What exactly is your problem with the wide receivers? The Chiefs, in this case, this is, I think, where you and I are making the argument. Chiefs weren't the number one offense in the league last year, and they lacked explosiveness at the running back position, partially due to the injuries that they sustained and having to go back to Kareem Hunt. You and I are still pretty big believers in Isaiah Pacheco. Again, I think the optimist outlook of this is they think Pacheco's going to be really good again. And that, you know, like they're not worried about their room because Pacheco will carry the room again. And if you go back to rookie year Pacheco, I can't even argue the point. It's just coming off the injury. He got hurt. Elijah Mitchell, that's, you want to talk about just another wild card. He started 11 games in three full NFL seasons. He's played in 25. Like, maybe he helps the room, but like, I can't bank on that in any way. That can't be your plan going into the year, I guess.
Yeah, around the draft, too, one thing that came out just was how we all consumed it. You know, we were at the landing on Thursday night, and that first round gets over right around 11 o'clock or so. And so a lot of people discussing, is that how it should go moving forward? Roger Goodell was even on the Pat McAfee show. He gave a great idea, and I hope this is something that they actually are going to consider. He said, hey, we need to shorten the first round. He said he thinks the draft is too long. And his unique idea for that is to shorten the clock from 10 minutes to 7 for the first round. And then, Cody, you would allow them a one-time, you know, get-out-of-jail-free card, basically, a one-time extension. He said, if
okay,
there's seven,
I like that.
Seven-minute first round, and you get 2 minutes extra if you actually need it one time. And I think that's a great idea. I don't know if the TV partners will like it, but the Eagles picked at midnight on the East Coast.
How much more time do you need for the TV partners? Right. The broadcast runs 6 hours.
And you got plenty of coverage all the next day and the next day after that. This would be great if you told me that by the time the Chiefs pick at 31 or 32 on a night, it's 9:45 or 10. Way better. On a
please?
Thursday night?
This is one of the few times I would say the NFL is looking to do something for the fan, not for the bottom line, because this is for the fans. Like, the shortening of the round doesn't apply to anything else. All the other sponsors, I can run more commercials if I run a 14-hour telecast waiting for you to do all this stuff. It's too long. They spend a lot of time doing this research, and if you want, you can give them two timeouts if you want for 7 rounds gold, and you're probably more likely to use those things in the earlier rounds, right? First, second, third round, trying to get a deal done, trying to move the needle a little bit. But if they can make a pick in the second or in the third round in 2 less minutes, well, why can't they in the first? They've already shortened it anyway. Remember when it used to be 15 gold? Remember when it was just like...
It used to be 15 in the first round?
What, at 15?
Was it that long?
I think at one point
I think it was 15.
Jeez.
I mean, I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that it used to be like out of control.
Was that back when they had the whole thing on Saturday?
Back when like first and second, maybe it was, I can't remember exactly. I have to look it back up, but yeah, somewhere around that time. But it's just like, yeah, why wouldn't I like this? As a fan, yes, please. Also, I like people putting pressure to stuff. I hope you make a mistake. I think part of this, I think the draft should actually, like, we try to treat it like they should have every available resource to them. They should have to be forced into like a, oh, this is our guy, this is our guy. Damn it, what are we going to do? They got a board, come on. Like, they can't make a decision. They've got, if the guy they want gets taken, they got the guy right down on the list right after it. We pretend like that they need the additional 10 minutes. It's more just like advertisement for the teams.
Yeah, it makes it just more interesting. It makes it way more interesting if, in fact, they do this. The fact the commissioner said it means I think they're actually going to seriously consider it. I just wonder if the TV partners completely say, no. No, we need the 4 hours. We need the 4 hours of airtime. You're not doing this on us.
Can we just give you some more coverage analyzing the picks? Can we give you more pre and post game? Like, what do you need instead of just the actual part?
Goodell is just tired of hearing Kuiper go on and on and on about
it got ridiculous. It got ridiculous.
I mean, he was about to fight everybody on the set,
like
apparently.
The Shedeur Sanders thing was obviously the biggest story of the entire draft and throughout the weekend and everything. But over and over, Mel Kiper just acting like everybody was a moron for not taking Sanders. And he was so dug in and refused to acknowledge that he might have been wrong, that he wasn't a first-round quarterback. Even when he was taken in the fifth round, was pretty wild.
His Jimmy Clausen take should invalidate his entire argument around it, in my opinion.
I mean, everybody has bad draft takes, so I don't want to just like ding somebody on a single bad draft take, quarterback or any other position.
He bet his career on it, Cody.
I know, but like it's an entertainment job, man. Yeah. That's the kind of thing you're supposed to say. Not like supposed, but like he was a big believer in Clausen. I'll be honest.
Yes, he was.
NFL teams have made far more egregious errors than that. So, like, should Mel Kiper have to hang it up? Or for every GM who takes a horrible first-round quarterback, should they have to quit too, right? Like, if you took...
Very right.
You know, like, should you just have to quit your damn job if you took Josh Rosen? Or should you get a chance to take Kyler Murray? I mean, people make mistakes in their job.
We're going to talk more draft later in the 1 o'clock hour with Bink. He's already texted me and says, it's Ashton Gelati, guys. He says, come on. So
I said Gelati first.
So I know. And then I said, is it Gelat? And it's Gelati. Bink is ready to roll. He's going to join us in the 1 o'clock hour today. I'm told he doesn't like the Chiefs draft.
Maybe we can get him a Gelati.
He needs a beer or two after this work he put in this week. And him and Chris were on all day Saturday. And then I was listening on Sunday briefly. I know Bink doesn't like the Chiefs draft. We'll find out why later on in the show. But up next, let's talk briefly about the Royals, not the wide receiver, like the baseball team, the Royals, and what they did over the weekend. Just getting started here on a Monday. We'll keep talking draft throughout the show. I did see in the nation's capital today the big announcement on the sports front, the Washington Commanders announcing plans for a brand new stadium, a timeline to open. Their stadium is 2030. There's renderings of the new RFK Stadium with a glass roof, views of the U.S. Capitol. I mean, it looks pretty awesome. And just, of course, we know we've been waiting a while for the Chiefs to decide what they want to do. And it looks like now the Commanders still have to secure some of their financing as well, but these are renderings that the team is putting out. We've never seen rendering other than the renovation at Arrowhead, renderings from the team on a potential new stadium. So just like, are the Commanders 2030? That already is ahead of the Chiefs timeline, because the Chiefs have said after 2030, right?
My guess is that in the summer, if they actually get around to announcing this damn thing, that they'll pop a rendering down with it too, if it's a new stadium goal. I don't want to say for sure, but I think, you know, it'll at least get.
It just feels like they jumped the line here all of a sudden here. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Well, by the way, theirs has a roof on it too. So for those wondering, like, the chances of a new stadium not having one is,
if the Chiefs get a new stadium, they'll have a roof.
Going to have a roof.
No, I mean,
I like the idea of the glass roof though, because I would like it to be like where you can still see outside and the lighting comes in and all that. I don't like it where it's completely closed.
I think that that's what works so well. The Raiders did it on the end, and this is what Minnesota did. I think there's a couple of different ways to do it where they're doing a better job of making the dome stadium feel less like. If anybody's ever been to the old Metrodome in like Minneapolis, you walked in there and you immediately felt like you were in a tunnel. Like, ugh, the hell am I even doing in here? This makes me feel like I don't even get to be a part of like the outside. Can you put one window in here or no? Versus, I think people now have come to the adjustment of their gold, so I wouldn't worry too much about
projected cost. Now, it's not a done deal in D.C. yet, but projected cost $3 billion for their stadium.
How do you like the rendering, by the way?
I love it.
Is it pretty?
I love it. Here's why I like it. It doesn't look like a cookie-cutter indoor stadium. You know, the worry that I have with some of these.
All right. I mean, I get that.
The big thing for them in D.C. is that they're moving back to the RFK site. Instead of being in Virginia.
D.C.
Yeah.
But also, like, that area of the country is a lot closer than we, you know. You can get on a train and go from Philly to New York in what seems like a reasonable amount of time versus here where everything's a little bit more spread out. But this goes back to our thing on the Kansas stuff is, people would feel that way if all of a sudden, like, the Chiefs went out to Kansas and then 20 years from now they were going back downtown or going back there. It's not that those things aren't possible. Oh, God, I want some kind of real update for the Royal stuff. By the way, it's important to note that the the thing still needs city council approval
in DC.
In DC, which is kind of, I'm noting that because in the middle right now of a recall attempt of Frank White.
Yeah, the difference in DC, I would say, one, they don't seem to have the same issue with that, but also their fans wanted them to go back to this RFK site. That was the pop. This is the popular site. In Kansas City, the debate is whether or not they're going to stay where they're at or leave somewhere else that is a mixed bag in terms of emotional feelings from fans. Majority of Commanders fans, previously Redskins fans, obviously, they wanted to go move to this site. That's and they also, FedEx Field, by the way, one of the worst stadiums in the NFL that they're currently in. Like, their stadium is a dump.
No, but they're going the inverse, right? They want to go back downtown. Yeah. So
and
like,
their fans are the RFK site, they're happy about that.
Yeah, versus if, but like, that's the thing. I think fans would be fine with downtown baseball. I don't think that's...
I said Virginia, Maryland. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I think fans would be fine with downtown baseball. It's always just a question of whether or not they'll actually get it. But let's talk a little Royals baseball because, look, it was... everyone was on thin ice. They're sending out MJ. People are calling for heads. They want Alex Zumwalt fired. Things are looking pretty bleak there for a little while. Now the Royals have won 7 of 8, 6 of 7 in the homestand. Ooh, lost yesterday.
What a difference a week or two makes.
They were back to 500 as of yesterday. They're a game under after a loss on Sunday where Alvarez hit that ball pretty hard. He's a pretty good baseball player. I don't know if anyone knew that yet.
Got off to slow starts this year. But
he's a great player. He's so dangerous.
Stay healthy.
I think when you go through here, the Royals are now winning in the exact way they scored. They're still not gangbusters on offense. Massey's still not hitting. Vinny's still struggling at the plate. Like, they got guys who are still struggling to hit. India hasn't been the same, and his adventure in left field has certainly not gone smooth here in the early going, but now they're winning. You know why? Because they can still pitch. This same thing came into play, and the way I view this team is they are so much like last year's team. They can pitch. Bullpen's way better now. Hitting's a little bit worse at the moment. But to me, I watched them on paper. I watched them play. This still looks like a playoff team to me.
Look, it just is a reminder for all of us when there's things going really well and things going poorly this early in the year, and we're still in the month of April, why you don't panic either way. You don't act like your team's going to win the World Series if they get off to a 15-5 start, and you don't act like the season is over on April 20th when your team gets off to a 9-15 start. I mean, that's all it is for me. I think we all know better, but we're guilty of doing it on both sides of it. I don't think everything is suddenly fixed with the Royals, but it was a reminder that they were not going to have the worst offense in baseball. They were not going to be the worst team in the American League or third worst team in the American League just like that quickly. Yeah. And we can't make a decision on how the team is going to do based off of 20 games. And that's what this last week has just reminded. Yeah, one series was the Rockies, but the Astros, right? For those of you who are like, well, it's the Rockies. Who cares? Well, what about winning a series against the Astros? Now they go down to Tampa. That's another
14-14 team, right? Where they are.
They're in the middle of the 25-game stretch you and I talked about, where the only, and I haven't updated it, at the time, only one
still
team.
Still the only team that's above 500, above 500 Red Sox, and they're Boston. 16-14.
Right? So that's where things are at. Do I think that the hitting still has a lot of work to be done? Do I still think there's future roster moves and all that are needed? Absolutely. But they're winning games while still trying to figure this thing out, and they've avoided falling out of it the way some of you maybe thought they were out of it. They're right there. They're a game under 500.
The Astros are the team right now that would possess the 7th seed in the playoff, less than 30 games into the season, mind you. The Royals are a game out of a playoff spot. Like, if you just need, like, a breath, a moment to think about it, I'll tell you what's really taking place here in the AL, which is the Detroit Tigers appear to be the team who's pitching exactly like the Royals. Lights out. They got starters. They got relievers. But they're actually hitting to go with it, so that's why they got the best record in the American League. The Yankees are winning a lot despite some of their own pitching issues. They're just hitting their way out of their problems, and everyone else is the same. There is no quantifiable difference between what you're seeing in the Seattle Mariners and realistically, probably all the way down to the Royals, Blue Jays, like that range of things. It is a huge wash in the American League, and what's most important about this stretch probably is that they couldn't really afford to bury themselves twice. The slow start to the season means they had to play good baseball during this stretch of below 500 teams. It's almost impossible. Like, we talked about this on the road trip. Now for that 25-game stretch, well, they're already 7-1 during it. So, like, I mean, it's going to be hard gold for them to, like, be really bad during that stretch just based on the way that this early stretch is going. And now that they've bought themselves some back to even, they can play some even baseball for a little while if they had to.
They can, and when you struggle the way they did against, you know, some of the top tier teams in that last prior week you need to dominate teams like the Rockies and teams like the White Sox and to allow you to struggle like they did against Cleveland and New York. And so, but to this point, that's what they've been able to balance out. And that was some similarities to a year ago. The White Sox are better than last year's team, but the White Sox still sink. Like, I don't know why we think the Royals can't still dominate them to a certain extent when they get an opportunity to play them next week at Kauffman Stadium. Off day today, then they take on the Tampa Bay Rays. But acting like if someone says someone texts in, they have no chance at competing.
But they're competing right now.
They're the one game under 500.
How can you say that they have no chance to compete if they're actively competing?
They're
a game
the playoffs,
out of the final playoff spot.
The text says, making the playoffs is fine, but when you have no chance at advancing deep, it's not as exciting. Okay. I mean, the playoffs are a crapshoot.
What the roster looks like in July.
Yeah, I mean,
what if they trade for Bat and Jack Caglione's here? Do you feel different about their chances?
I mean, I also think if everybody in this town is being honest with themselves, even though I've told you the expectation should be to win the division this year, the bar has been raised. But if we're all being honest with ourselves, if they go to the playoffs and win a playoff series and then lose in the divisional round, be honest, like how many of you would sign up for that right this second? I think a lot of you would. I'm not saying that's what the team should feel and they should have loftier goals. And I have loftier goals as well. But I think if we're being honest with ourselves, I told you the same thing happened, Cody. They make the playoffs, they win a playoff series, they lose in the next round. I bet you a lot of fans would sign up for that again. That's how a majority of the season goes for a lot of people.
I'd probably take that 20 times in a row and then just take the wild card of what happens in the playoffs.
But this year, are you rolling the dice or would you sign up for that right now?
I mean, I don't know. I'd probably sign up for it. That means,
that's what I'm saying.
I looked this up. And it was a depressing stat, so I decided not to bring it to the air because it's depressing. So why do that? You and I are both lifelong Royals fans. We come from families of lifelong Royals fans. In my entire life, just how many times they've made the playoffs? In the Royals' entire franchise history, do you know how few times they've made the playoffs 2 times in a row? And so do I understand that by saying I'll blindly accept losing the divisional round is accepting that in order, and this is what I tell the bad teams in the NFL as we're coming out of the draft too, in order to improve your standing as a franchise in the pantheon of baseball and to matter every year, you better start with not being a laughingstock. You better start with consistent winning. That's what the Royals have never had in the history of their franchise outside of the 70s and early 80s. And so, and even then, they had a hard time making the playoffs back to back years, partially because they didn't have as many playoff teams. But just that's the way the lay of the land was. So yeah, I'd take another playoff run. And you know, and it's easy because you get caught up in your own stuff. The team they're going to face next week, the Baltimore Orioles, a team that was a playoff team last year,
who
started cold this year, has stayed cold. They got one of the worst records in the American League. They just got shut out by the Tigers again yesterday. They stink.
Yeah, they lost Corbin Burns and then everything. They got a bunch of young talent, like big-time prospects on that roster, but right now it hasn't come together for them.
Yeah, and so it can go a lot of different ways. So will I take 500 right now, not knowing what the entirety of the season will bring just yet?
Be around that heading into Memorial Day weekend. Honestly, we say that a lot. Like you want to be above it, but if you're 500 going in Memorial Day weekend a month from now, you're in it. And then we can talk about, they should go be trading for this bat or calling up this guy or not calling up that guy. For the time being, stay in the mix. And anybody acting like they're not in the mix right now, you made up your mind 2 weeks ago and you just refuse to admit that the season's not over or refuse that you might have been wrong, that the season was cooked. How many season is cooked texts did we get 10 days ago?
I mean, a lot. And that's just wrong, right? Because now we can look at the standings.
And spoiler, when they lose 3 or 4 in a row at some point, because it's going to happen again, that doesn't mean the season's cooked in 2 weeks. If they lose 3 or 4 in a row, if they all of a sudden slide to being 500 again after being 3 games above 500, let's say, it's so. I think people forget sometimes it's the long pace of the baseball season. It's not like an NFL season where you start 0-2 and you're already like must win, or we're screwed. We can't fall to 0-3. There's 162 games.
It's a harder sport to track for that.
But with that said, the offense, of course, for the bigger picture, yeah, we're still in the same spot talking about that. The offense has to pick it up.
Meanwhile, in the NFL draft, the single biggest storyline of draft weekend was Shedeur Sanders, who ended up going in the fifth
Wild.
Round to the Cleveland Browns after they had selected a different quarterback, mind you.
Right.
outside of it. So there's two things. I don't think there's any way. There's the only way you fall that far is if a multitude of things happen. One is that you were never a first round talent in the evaluator's eyes across the board. Okay, just period, plain and simple. There.
Obviously at this point.
But then you also must have tanked a ton of these interviews to a flaw level that I can't even possibly conceive. This is still shocking to me. I cannot believe he fell this far, considering some of the other quarterbacks who were taken before him, including a guy like Dylan Gabriel. And then I just don't buy some of this stuff where, like, the Steelers maybe had a really terrible interview with him, but they'll bring in Aaron Rodgers. That guy might crawl into a hole tomorrow. They'll take a chance on a 40-year-old, but not this kid. It's so weird.
I think what happened is, obviously, they did not evaluate him as a first-round quarterback, these teams. And it's not all 32 teams, because remember, there's really only like 5 to 7 teams that were interested in quarterbacks to begin with in the draft, if that. And so once he was not viewed as a first-round quarterback talent-wise, then if the reports are true that he maybe was lazy in these interviews and was disinterested that he had with these meetings that he had with GMs, then coupled with what comes with Shador Sanders, his dad, the quote-unquote baggage, whatever that is, teams are like, well, why am I going to mess with that for someone we view as a backup? That's why he slid to round 4, ultimately round 5. I think that's what happened. What I can't figure out, though, we know guys like Mel Kiper or Matt Miller, et cetera, are very well connected, right? They have relationships built over years and years and years with these front offices. How did nobody at some point during the last, at some point in the last 2 months, how did nobody say, hey, you guys are all evaluating him like he can go in the first round? He's not a first round quarterback. That's what I can't fathom.
None of us have him. He tanked the interviews because the interviews happened over a month ago.
Yeah, like Matthew Berry had a story weeks and weeks back that said he was hearing that the interviews were terrible and some teams viewed him differently after those. That's fine. But what I mean, we hear all the time the media that is attached to the draft will say, hey, this player is actually going to go a lot higher than you think. And that's, where are they getting that from? From teams, right? How did none of the teams that let him slide tell the Mel Kipers of the world, like, hey, man, you're way off on your evaluation, man. Like, team, we don't view him as a first-round quarterback. That's what I can't fathom.
This is the part where I think NFL teams, like, that I'll go out and say that I think NFL teams do wrong because they're cowards. We talk about this sometimes with, like, NFL GMs and, like, when Bill Belichick and the Falcons and all this other stuff, where your ego gets in the way or your lack of management ability gets in the way. Because I do think that there were probably teams who had him around the third round grade. But the story that started to come out a little bit that I think is some truth to it is, well, now that we're drafting for backup quarterbacks, we like the backup quarterbacks to be like a plant, a house plant.
That's what I'm saying. They didn't want the baggage at that point.
Yeah. It's the cactus on the shelf that I don't want to pay any attention to. We don't want a camera on him. We would rather have a way lower talented player so that we don't have to work harder at our jobs. I'm like, that is a terrible, I just think generally a terrible.
But that is how it works typically. That's why Tim Tebow to a certain extent, you know, there's other players we can look at. I think so much of this story too, is about how the public felt about him. Like, I'm not, the theories about like the teams weren't blackballing the Sanders family or anything like that stuff is crazy to me. Do I think the public reaction to the slide and those that took joy in it, those that thought the prank call was weird, funny and all that, that stuff is, it's more of a you problem and you've got a personal issue with how the Sanders operate. And that's fine, but like that's a you problem. The teams weren't blackballing or anything like that, but I think there were fans that took joy in it. They just don't like Deion Sanders, and that's fine. The prank call, I don't care how you felt, that was
very
completely
messed up.
And for those that don't know, the son of the Falcons defensive coordinator got this phone number for Sanders from his dad's iPad, it sounds like, and he's 21 years old. So I say kid, like he's 21 and
old enough to know better.
Old enough to know better. And he did this prank call, and that's, you cannot like the Sanders family. You can't tell me that's not messed up. Like, you, oh, it's a prank. You think it's hilarious, whatever. I guess people like making, you know, basically embarrassing people, I guess, on social media, because imagine if you're waiting for the biggest call of your life, whatever that is in your life. Everybody has that moment. They think viewed as their, whether it's
job.
For job, college, whatever, like biggest moment. And imagine if somebody pranked you in that spot and also put out a video of you getting basically pranked. That's messed up.
He wasn't the only one either. Tyler Warren apparently had, he was prank called by the Jets at 7.
Cooper DeJean apparently last year, and a bunch of others reportedly. This is just a humanity thing. I shouldn't have to be like, imagine it in your shoes or in the shoes of a person that you love in order for you to have sympathy for another person. That is an incredibly screwed up thing to do. And I don't think that there's any excuse to be like, pranks are funny. Crank calls are ha-ha funny. No, they're not. Not when it's talking about people's lives. Because if I put it in any, and I shouldn't have to do this again, but if I put it in any other scenario's life, you got a daughter and her dream is to go to Yale. And instead of, and in the letter in the mail, Drew sends her a fake letter accepting her to Yale and then be like, ha, got your ass. It's not funny. It's mean and cruel and unnecessary. Like, and I know he's 21 and he apologized. And good for, you know, honestly, for all the things you talk about, the character stuff that people had problems with Sanders, taking that kid's call.
He handled it very well.
Bigger man than me. Because I wouldn't have taken his call. I'd have told him to kick rocks. I'd have been like, kiss my ass, man. I don't owe you the dignity of apologizing to me. You can just stew on that for the rest of your life. I don't owe you anything, is how I would feel in that moment. And so, but it's just cruel. Like, there's no other, like, I don't think there's any other way to view it.
I thought the way he handled it, everything in general, like, of course, I mean, he was on, I don't know if it was Shiloh's or his, he was on Twitch and he was like, yeah, man, I mean, this is part of it. Like I'm moving forward. He wasn't calling anybody out. He wasn't getting mad. I thought Shiloh did a nice shot. It just, in terms of handling it, it felt very professional the way that it was handled from all sides.
Now, as far as the football end of it, he goes to Cleveland. It is a crowded quarterback room. They just threw a bunch of numbers at it. It's got Kenny Pickett. It's got Joe Flacco. It's got Dylan Gabriel. It's got Shador Sanders. It technically has Deshaun Watson. It is a pretty crazy quarterback room there in Cleveland. And he has an opportunity, right? Like, he has an opportunity now to truly just focus on football and prove people wrong, not just on the football field, but like that you're going to be a distraction, all that. Prove people wrong. Focus on football. We'll see what happens.
17 games. Who starts the most games?
Gosh. Joe Flacco.
Not game one. Flacco. Who starts the I think most the answer to both, games for the Cleveland I think Browns this year?
The answer to both is Flacco.
Deshaun Watson's in dead last. Okay, he's dead last.
Yeah. I don't think Dylan Gabriel plays. I think Shador's more likely to play.
God, am I crazy for thinking it's Kenny Pickett? I don't.
Oh, man.
I think it's Flacco.
I think Flacco starts week one and just plays until Shador ends up just looking great or is ready to go. Do you think Shador plays at all?
No, not year one.
I think he gets in a garbage time game. If they happen to be killing somebody, they throw him in there.
If they're really...
Well, they're not carrying five quarterbacks, I think
Dylan Gabriel's...
If they're really, really bad...
That's tough.
You have to... If you're really, really bad, you have to play both Gabriel and Sanders. There are some people who think like six quarterbacks might go in the first round next year. You don't want to be left out in the cold. You took a third and a fifth. If they fail, they fail. You just take another one. But like, you gotta, I think both of them get on the field this year. Or at least one. One of Dylan Gabriel and Sanders are playing at some point this year.
It has to be Shador, right? Like Shador is, I understand Dylan Gabriel was great at Oregon, but it doesn't, it's gotta be Shador. If he gets on the field, there's no reason, if they're losing, there's no reason Shador shouldn't be on the field. Because at worst, if he plays one balls out, you could trade him, essentially, at that point. You can at least get something for him if you're not going to use him.
I am still surprised. Like, there's a lot of people on the text line, same thing. No one was harmed. It was funny. We saw him, like, it is not funny to mess with people's actual lives. He didn't, like, I didn't put a whoopee cushion in Alex's chair or a fake spider around the corner or move his car in a parking lot. Those are harmless things. And now, it's not just Sanders. They shouldn't have done it to Cooper DeJean or there was the offensive lineman who got taken by the Bills in the sixth round who said he received five different prank calls. It's wrong on all of them. I'm not just upset because it was Shador or Sanders. That's just a cruel thing to do. An unnecessarily cruel thing to do.
Someone says, so the fake FCC letter to Dusty for fines is cool then? Again, he wasn't losing his job off of that. He wasn't.
I didn't say every prank.
Yeah. It says, now you're taking to the stream acting like you can't prank anybody. There's a difference between getting a call that changes your life, literally, change everything for the rest of your life, versus just a funny prank around the office. Also, the difference is it's a radio bit, not to fill you in. It's called a radio bit. It's a little bit different than literally embarrassing someone on national television like that. Anyway, we're just going to agree to disagree on that text line, I guess. But moving up to the rest of the draft, let's get to that. Favorite pick, worst pick, some of the interesting moves across the draft, and the theme of the Chiefs draft. That's coming up next.